So that's why I think everything we do, we throw 100% passion into it, and if we're not passionate about it, we're just not interested. Mm. I'm very much so. Hence why I probably left an amazing job of coaching at number one club in the world, Wigan. To be a barber. Do you know what I mean? Everyone, when I told everyone in the change room, they were like, "What? You're going to go and be a barber? You're working at Wigan. You're a 19s coach, probably going to go into first team, but you're going to throw all that way to go and start cutting
hair.
We're
not that money hungry, are we?
No, no.
You're all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Going without headset today. So this is me playing this as well.
You wish.
I wish, mate. Yeah.
It's well good.
Yeah, a guy in Australia.
He make it for you?
Yeah, a Kiwi guy in a bar. I loved listening. Every Sunday I just go there and listen to him live. And then when COVID hit, he only lived like a couple of streets away from me. And he said, like, so when COVID, no, you could only go walk and stuff. Mm. So he'd play music off his balcony, and you could go into the street, and you'd just get a deck chair, sit, have a couple of beers, give him a $10, and he would just play all the time.
You're joking.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And he's like a class thing. He's always singing live around Brisbane in bars and stuff. And then got along with him really well. And I said, mate, I've got this plan of this podcast. I just need someone who can create like a good theme song to it, yeah, like Walkers Only. He's like, all right, I can do this for you.
That's
he did it.
So
that's
cool.
Sick.
Yeah, so Jordan James and the beautiful Harriet, how are you doing, guys?
Good, thanks. Yeah, really good.
How are you feeling? A bit nervous? You all right?
A little bit.
Yeah, I'm not nervous.
I've never done a podcast. Have
you're,
you done a
you're
podcast?
You're famous, so you always get
well, I'm used to speaking in front of people that usually it means I just speak gibberish, but yeah, so if that's a podcast, then we can make it work, can't
we?
For
sure. Yeah.
Well, I thought we'd just keep it rolling from the start when you two were just winging it.
So yeah, we do. We don't argue, do we? We don't argue. No. We never argue it's like one of us all like say something that will wind the other one up really like loads, but we just end up laughing straight away. We can't hold that bit of anger with each other. It's impossible, isn't it?
It's very annoying. But I want to be angry with
but everybody. We do like nitpick at each other now and again, but generally, I don't think we've ever had an argument, have we?
Wow, that's powerful, that
which
one.
Which is quite, you know, ten years, so.
Maybe you have to be a couple of counsellors.
Maybe. I don't know about that.
I think it's just luck.
Yeah, we're both probably. We fit each other's sort of personalities. I think that's the key.
Well, you're in business together as well, so there's a lot of stressful factors in part.
Oh my God, stress through the roof.
I just want to say on that, Jord, I was thinking about this earlier. My first ever game for Wales, I think you was our captain. I don't know. I'm trying to think about
what year would that be?
2000 and gosh, I think 11 or 12. It was against France. Yessen Harris was the coach, and we played at Wrexham.
Oh, so was that when we played the Four Nations?
No, it was
year before.
It was before that.
Year before. Oh, yeah, when Yessen played the last game.
No, Yessen was coach then.
Oh, was he coaching?
I don't know if you... I was thinking about it earlier. I'll have to look at the photo.
I don't know if I... No, well, I must have played because I didn't miss a game.
No, but he said, were you the...
Oh, was I captain?
You might have been...
2011.
I think it was 11 or 12, yeah.
I can't remember
Jordan's memory,
but that's one thing from rugby that I can definitely thank everyone for is my memory is absolutely horrendous.
It's gone, there's nothing there,
really.
It's terrible. I can't even actually remember many games,
really,
which is sad, isn't it? But
just from head knocks.
Well, whether it's head knocks or old age or I block it out, I don't know. It's just very strange. I don't remember many games at all, really. I certainly don't remember any before 2010, which is quite weird. But yeah, no, it's very strange. But I'll try not to dwell on it, because otherwise you just get worried, don't you?
Yeah, you start going down that spiral. Lane.
Yeah.
What I was going to bring up was, if you remember it, you must have been a part of it. So do you remember that? Like, we had it was a good team. Lee Breers was I think assistant coach at the time.
Yeah.
Gibbo was one of the assistants as well.
Yeah. Was it away or home against France?
Home.
At home.
And basically, I remember in the hotel in North Wales, like, we were playing, like, this quiz on tables. It was, like, the older heads, the kids. I was one of the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And we losers had to do the cinnamon challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Channing? Does this come back to you now?
Yeah, Channing, I can remember the cinnamon challenge.
He was on the drip before the game.
Yeah, that was the worst challenge. Whoever came up with that challenge, they need to be able to forget stuff as well, because that was horrendous. So
do you have to do it?
No, I don't think I ever did it, but
we weren't losing, but the kids had to get it, obviously, because the older heads made it work out that they lot. And I was one of the kids. It was me, Channing, Rodri Lloyd, and a couple others. I remember we were standing there, we just had a big feed. Boom, all of us had a cinnamon, bang it down.
Oh, you can't breathe, can you?
Can't breathe, spewing.
Horrendous.
Channing had a drip before the game because he was that sick.
Yeah.
He started spewing so much, he had to ever be on a drip.
A huge drip?
Yeah, so we were... It was
you did this before the game?
Day before. Like the night before, wasn't it? Or something.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Team bonding.
Yeah, some of the team bonding things we did were really not team bonding. They were they were just trying to hurt each other most of the time. Yeah.
But... Obviously, I know a lot about Jordan. Harriet, I don't know an amazing amount about you, but I know you're a hard worker, that's for sure.
Yeah, aren't I, darling?
Yeah, she is a hard worker.
You got him into the barbering industry?
My dad was quite a famous hairdresser, which is why I got into hairdressing. He had 7 shops, and that was like my goal when I was older, just to run all those. And then obviously I met Jordan. And I was like, right, I'm moving to Manchester.
Yeah.
And my mum was like, you can't leave, like, the family business. And I was like, I'm going. Like,
wow.
So I just left it all and came and lived with Jordan and just went and worked for someone, which was, like, a big, like... Yeah,
you hated that, didn't you?
Yeah, it was just weird. Like, I was, like, Terry's daughter. Everyone was, like, you know, all really nice to me. And I could not do what I wanted because I would never be like that. But when I moved up to apply for a job, it was just weird.
But let me put this into perspective. So her dad was very famous in the hair game. I would probably, if you look at, say, your dad being a famous football player,
okay,
yeah, and then you're going about other clubs and everyone all of a sudden knows you as that person's dad, like that person's son or daughter,
yeah.
That's what it was like for you in the hair industry, wasn't it, where you
well,
would
like
go.
The guy that I was working for, Nicky Clark, he was like, oh my God, because he was good friends with my dad. My dad had passed away by then, but he was like, why are you coming to work here?
Wow.
I was like, because I'm in love.
Chasing love.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So but that's how it started, really. Mm.
So then after that, then obviously your dad being extremely ambitious, like from your perspective then, it's probably instilled in you that you want to become your own boss and, you know, like
exactly.
You've got these hard-wired things in your background as well.
So I've always just wanted my own shop, really. And when Jordan was like, I'm finishing rugby, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I've never had a real job, is what he said. Because he was a Marine.
That's right.
Then he went to play rugby. He's like, I don't even, like, I've never written a CV. I've never had a normal job. And he was like, well, I don't want to be a hairdresser. And I was like, well, barbering's cool. So we kind of both... went with that, didn't we? Because we both wanted to work with each other. We knew that 100%.
Yeah, it got to the point in my career where I finished playing rugby. I went straight into coaching, and that was my first time I actually had, I'd say, a boss or a line manager or people to answer to other than a rugby coach or someone like that, or you know, a sergeant or a corporal. So when I started that job coaching, and like I had people telling me what to do that I didn't genuinely. You know, I just didn't take instruction that well from them. And especially it was more so I did the job as best as I could, but it was more the stuff that were asking me to do out of hours and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I've given up, you know, 12, 13 years of my life to rugby already, not going on holidays, not doing this, not doing that. And I just thought, do I want to do that for the next 20 years? It's not, you know, so we sort of, Harriet sat me down and she could see how unhappy I was and, she just said, what do you want to do? And I was like, I ain't got a clue, but I just know I don't want to work for anyone else. And that was where we sort of came up with
We were going to have a gym, weren't we?
Yeah, we started. We toyed with the idea of having a gym.
Like, I wish we had a gym.
We toyed with that idea for a bit, didn't we? Because we're both into our fitness and stuff. But then we decided against that.
Mainly because I've never even worked in a gym.
No.
And I thought, I've got so much experience in like the hair world.
Yeah.
It would seem silly to do something that neither of us know a great deal about running a gym.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you showed me barbering, I really enjoyed it, didn't I? Straight from the off, really. It was something that.
You like a duck to water?
Yeah. Well, it was really hard.
You loved it, didn't you?
Yeah, but I just loved it. I think it's coming from a team environment that I've always been in since I was probably 6 years old. Whether it was in the Marines or in playing rugby, I always had a team around me, and if something happened, I could go, oh, he missed his tackle, that's why I missed mine. Or whereas in barbering, it's like, you know, if you leave a line in a hair, that's you, it's nobody else. If, you know, if you mess up a haircut, which happens, that's you. It's no one else. I can't blame that. It's not my tools, it's not anything else, it's me. So I think I thrived on that quite a lot, because I don't think I'd had that challenge as much growing up and playing team sports. And I think that's what, you know, really made me even more passionate about it, is that it was just me. So if I wanted to be good at it, which I want to be good at everything, that I've got to like really put my heart and soul into it and practice and practice and practice and practice. And that's what I did.
Wow. So it's pretty interesting. And one thing you just said then that come to my brain was speaking to someone yesterday, an ex-player as well, and he was talking about how, like, when he was in a job for a company, he found that, like, he was, like, treading onto other people's work to improve their thing, and, like, coming home never fully satisfied because he always wanted to try and make that perfect thing. And I think that's hardwired into us through sports, because whenever you play a game, you'd finish the game, regardless of how good you played, the first thing you'd think about is, what can I do to be better? You know what I mean? You never... And that's a really hard thing then I think we take into life at times, because you're always like, for instance, I don't know, maybe if I just faded that guy's hair a little bit better, that, you know, you're never fully satisfied. And it's like...
You don't stop thinking about it. You go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it.
You're to me all the time, aren't you? I'll show her a haircut that what I like, but I'll show it to her and like she'll go, that is sick, like you've done so well on that, and instantly I'll pick something up with it and I'll
be like, don't post it.
No, don't post it, because that I don't like that bit, or I don't like this bit. I'm so critical of my own work that probably does hold me back quite a lot, but it's something I'm trying to get over.
I think it's better to be like that than being like, oh, I'm amazing.
Yeah, but we've got barbers that
they're putting it out there like they're the best things to slice bread.
You know what I mean? But we've really got like people like that, or we've had people in the past like that. You know, and I'm just like, well, I wish I had that confidence, but then that's what you're made up of, isn't it? So sometimes you don't try and fight it, just, you know, go with it and try and improve it. But that's about it, really.
What got you into the Marines?
Basically because I wasn't very good at rugby growing up.
Really?
Yeah, well, I was good at rugby, but I probably wasn't quite good enough. So from the age of like 5-6, my old man had me in rugby clubs, and I just obsessed over rugby my whole life, really. I wasn't into football. I played a bit of cricket and stuff like that, but that was more because it was in the summer and rugby wasn't on. But I just obsessed over rugby. Got all the way through school level, you know, play county, regional, stuff like that. And then got to like 16, 17, when they were sort of handing out first team contracts, had a couple of trials at Gloucester Colts and places like that, and just didn't get a contract. And I was like, oh dear, what do I do now? This is all I've thought about doing for the last, you know, 16 years of my life. And that was when I was like, oh, right, okay, time to rethink this. So I spoke to my mum and my dad, and initially I was going to join the army, mainly because I knew I could still play sport, but then also get to do cool stuff as well. But it was actually my dad was a Royal Marine, but he was a Royal Marine bandy, so he played the drums in the band. but he was a Royal Marine, so he does tell me that, but he was a bandy. But it was my mum actually who said, look, why don't you go for the Marines? You know, and because I always doubted myself, initially, obviously, I was like, nah, I can't do that. The Marines is like next level hard. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to do that. She was like, you can do anything you want. And she basically taught me into it. And that was it. I spent the next year and a half running to work, running home from work, running with packs on, doing everything I could to sort of get past my selection, and got in. And that was it, really. It wasn't like I wanted to join the Marines. It was more like I know I can still play sport in there.
Yeah, it's an still alternative.
I can still do something in there. It wasn't to think that I was ever going to go and play pro rugby. That wasn't my thing. But I knew sport was so highly regarded in there. If I wanted to stay in sport, why not go and be a Marine? Do that, get to see a bit of the world, do some like Gucci stuff, and then you know, get to play a bit of sport off the back of it. So that was it, really. It wasn't like I grew up thinking I wanted to be a Marine. It was more of a backdoor entry into rugby. Smart. But
what was your, you know, the biggest learning curve you got from being in the Marines?
I think I've always said if I wasn't a Marine, I never would have made a rugby player. I think that was it probably gave me the killer edge that I lacked when I was 16, that didn't get me the contract or didn't get me into the club I wanted or didn't get me here. The Marines gave me that sort of killer mindset that, you know, you could push your body further than you ever think. You can push your mind further than you ever think. And that's what it sort of instilled into me, and it instilled discipline. It instilled everything that I probably didn't have when I was before I joined, which led me on to what I am now, I guess. So without that, I would never be the person I am today, without a doubt, without a doubt.
Wow, it's interesting because, like, it probably sets the standards of you now in business, relationships and everything. Because if I remember rightly, man, I felt like your career kicked on in the back end of your career. I felt like you were, you know, doing, it's like, you know, normally you get to, like, you know, early 30s and people are starting to dwindle, but you started to kick on.
Yeah, I started late, so I didn't sign pro till I was 23. So I was already what probably most players sign pro at 16. So I was already 7-8 years behind everyone. So it was a really steep learning curve for my first 4 or 5 years in the pro game, where I was basically, you know, on rubbish money, training as much as I could while working as well, because I was on such rubbish money, to basically get where I wanted to be. And that's what just the decision I made. I nearly joined back up in 2006. I just finished playing at Cass, and we got promoted to Super League, and I didn't get a contract, which I was fuming about because I thought I'd done enough to get at least a deal. Obviously, by this time, I'd only been out of the Marines 2 years, so I thought I'd got a deal. Didn't get the deal. The Marines were offering $8,000 bounty to sign back up, which $8,000 then was a lot of money, and I was skint. So
not much money in rugby.
No, there wasn't much money in rugby then, and I was working on the doors at the time as well, just to make ends meet, really. I literally went in the careers office to sign back up, because Afghan had kicked off. That's why they were offering all the bounty, and then literally 2 days later, after I'd been in the careers office, I got a phone call off my agent and said, "Wigan want to sign you." Wow. So I was like, "What?" So I rang the careers office and went, "I ain't coming back." See you later. And everything, I'm a big believer. I mean, me and Harriet are walkers of this life, is that everything happens for a reason. I'm a massive believer in fate. And I think that was my time not to go back and maybe get hurt or maybe do something happening to me. Lady Luck was on my side, because after that tour, quite a few of my mates got maimed and all sorts of stuff. So it just sort of, you know, put everything into perspective that, you know, you've got to take your chances when you can.
100%. Sounds like legit. I dodged a bullet there.
I literally, I reckon I did. 100%, I reckon I did, because, like I say, I've got quite a few mates that were in. They had so many firefights. They were in so many IEDs and so many contacts. You know, you know the odds are against you and that sort of stuff. So I'm just glad I didn't go back, really.
Shit. It's pretty crazy, that, isn't it? I think to go to Wigan as well, which is a prestigious club. It's pretty exceptional, man. Like, I was speaking to Cal about this yesterday, because I don't think he knew your whole background. And I said, Jordan's probably lived 3 people's lives, one life.
You say that, don't you? Yeah. You're like, I've lived so many different lives. This feels like a different life to what I've...
I think that's probably why I don't remember a lot of it. Because it's like 3 different chapters of my life have happened to me. Harriet being the biggest chapter, by the way. And I'm not just saying that because you're sat here. But
he's good, isn't he? Smooth operator.
He's good. I've taught him well.
Honestly, the last 10 years has literally changed my life from what was happening to me before. So... but I have literally lived 3 different lives, you know, from Marines to rugby and now to barbering and owning businesses. They're all 3 quite different things, but they all carry quite the same characteristics and stuff, which is good because they interlink into each other. But obviously, like I said, Harriet's the biggest one that's happened to me. That's probably made me a better person. That's the biggest change in my life, I think, is that I think I was an all right person before, but I'm such a better person now. Such a better person. And that's down to her. That's nothing else. you know, whether that was Marines or anything like that, like that was the nail in the coffin, really.
Do you reckon that's softening you a bit? You mean, isn't that the type of aspect?
Teaching you. Yeah, teaching. Just, I think it's just being more considerate for people. I think when, you know, I didn't really have many relationships when I was playing rugby. The odd one here or there for like a year or two and stuff. But so I was always quite on my own all the time. So I think I was quite a selfish person. but very, obviously... But I had to be that way because that's how I had to try and, you know, get better at what I was doing, the rugby at the time. So I had to be selfish. I had to do this. I had to do that. I didn't have much time for other people. Whereas now I try and we try and help people like at work that, you know, are going through problems. We try and listen. I'm not a great listener, so Harriet's definitely given me that. I'm more generous now, not as tight as I used to be.
I used to be quite tight.
It must be a rugby thing.
I've got mates who still got the same kit on from 10 years ago. Yeah. Like Reece Evans, mate. Remember Reece Evans, the twins, mate? That guy would have like shirts with holes on, or like a shirt his belly be hanging out because he'd just be holding on to kit and that.
He spends a lot of money on himself. But he's just not generous with anyone else.
But when I met Harriet, that all changed. But I just think she's just made me a much better person on the outlook on life and everything. Yeah, nice. You know, with everything that goes with it. It's changed my life in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest change from the past, you know, 30 years. I would say
that's amazing. That is that's really good. It's interesting because I think certain careers that you've gone down are very alpha male sports. Careers, Marines, are very alpha. So you kind of got to become this tunnel vision at times and selfish to put yourself at the top, you know, and then sometimes all it takes is a nice woman to change the whole dynamic and having
felt
a business.
I'm very pleased about it. I didn't mean to. It just happened.
But then in business as well, then, like, you know, you talk about then how you've got a team below you that's, you're not just barbers, you're bosses, you're counsellors to some, you're caring.
Yeah.
It's more than just one piece, isn't it? Like, you really got to test yourself at times.
And I think that's why we tend to work quite well together. We actually worked better together when we was in the shop together, didn't we? When we've opened our first shop, it was just me and Harry in the shop. And we just had such a good time, didn't we?
Yeah,
it was
no
great.
Stress.
There was no stress. We didn't have any people. It was just us two. We had the best laughs. I mean, all my mates are like, how do you work with your missus? Are you mad? Like, how do you do that? Like, half of them can't spend an hour in the house with them, let alone.
Get out.
Yeah, and I'm like, we actually work better together. And then we started taking on staff, which adds a little bit of stress, but we were still good. And then it was my idea to open the second shop, because this is the other thing that I've probably messed up with or instilled in us, is that, like, we don't like sitting still, do we?
No, as soon as things are, like, good and calm, it's like, what else?
What else can we do? Yeah. It's like, you know, things are going really well.
Really
the first
well.
Shop was killing it. We're going really well. And I was like, we need a second shop. And she's
we'll
like, are
it.
You
Double
sure?
No,
I'm like, I'm telling you.
Four of you guys.
Yeah, we're gonna kill it. We're going to get this second shop. It's going to be so good. And like, and I basically talked her into it. And it's been the hardest thing we've ever done, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But it's still satisfying. We sit down and we look at each other and we go, you know, we're doing all right. We are proud of what we've achieved. And loads of people come to the shop and the first thing they say is, oh, we love the shop, don't they?
Yeah, you guys are killing it. We're like, really?
But on the flip side, they don't see all the rest. But we are proud of it, but it is a lot of work. A lot of work. More than we ever thought it would be. And then now we're doing this other thing now, which is an app, on top of running these businesses. So we just don't like it. It's almost like
as
soon as stuff
like we like the stress.
Yeah,
like we don't think
we must
do.
Because it's like if I'm certainly like that. If I'm sat there and something's going really well, I'm thinking, right, how can I make it better?
What can we
do now to take this to the next level? What can we do to get here, to get there? And that's as much as I hate saying it, it's like, it's a good thing, but also a bad thing.
Because you never settle with...
You never settle.
We're happy you. You know what I mean?
It's yes.
There's this study, right, by... you talk about how we're driven by keep going and keep going. And there's a study by Jordan Peterson. He talks about it, how, like, these rats, for instance, or mice, sorry, they do this study on them where they'll put a block of cheese, right, in front of them all, and they'll have like a spring on the tail. And regardless of how hungry they are, will indicate how much they pull to get the cheese. And when there's no reason to go get the cheese, the pull is not that hard. But then when they put a cat behind them, you can see how much the mouse sprints to get the cheese. So I see that as a replication of life, because people don't like fear, because it's fear of this cat getting me. But I think we need fear
to drive you.
To drive us to go to the next level. When definitely. You play a good game of sports, or if it's in business or in the Marines, is there's a fear of I don't want to come last in training. It's a fear of I don't look stupid on the field. So we try and do that in life and replicate that in business. And I think it's a really good analogy on, you know, you do the one barbershop and the coffee shop, and you're like, what else can we do next? Because comfort is nice for so long, and then what's next? And just if you were bring that back to your dad with seven shops.
I don't know how he did that.
it's driven
your
by...
Your dad was a workaholic, though, wasn't he?
He was really ill towards the end of his life and still cutting hair, like, 6 days a week. I was like, what are you doing? But he's just addicted to it. He couldn't stop.
That was his thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was doing business meetings in hospital, arranging stuff. Like, I was like, just could not work. Yeah. What I'm did not he, like that.
What did he pass from, if you don't mind me asking?
Bowel cancer.
Bowel cancer, wow.
I know, and he was having loads of major operations and still, like, pass me my phone, let me...
Really?
Yeah.
To the last day he worked.
Yeah, he couldn't stop.
Couldn't stop.
Do you think he'd be proud of you, where you're at right now?
I hope so.
I know he would. Maybe not for being with me. Not for being with me. I never got to meet him.
That Jordan guy.
Probably a reason, yeah. Probably a reason. Everything happens for a reason. There we go.
I'm not sure if he'd be proud that I left all the shops and came and lived with Jordan, but I'm sure in the end, when he worked out how in love I was.
Yeah. There's you never know, there might be seven shops one day.
Never know.
You don't want to put any stress on you.
Okay.
No, definitely not.
Do you go back home much? Do you go back down south?
Not really.
No, we go to London to see friends every now and again. But other than that, we don't really go back there much now, do we? We're too busy, aren't we? It's like 7 days a week, do you know what I mean? It's nuts. But we'd like to go everywhere more, but we just don't have time, do we, Dan?
We don't have time for anything anymore. It's weird. Like, all our days off.
Yeah.
All our days off. Yeah. The day off we get. People are like, oh, day off. And it's like, well, not really. We've got to do all the admin, meetings.
Yeah. Go and pick up stuff, running about, whatever there is. You know, and then obviously with this app like that we were talking about, there's loads of stuff to do on that. It's a constant thing, isn't it? But
I wonder if when the app's out, if we'll think that we want to do something else.
We'll get a gym with the app.
I hope not.
Gym now.
Explain the app a bit to us, please.
So the app is... one of my friends is very successful in the online coaching world. Francis Dyer, Scott Francis. I'm lucky enough to... He's my training partner, a very good friend. And basically... He's took his business, his model, so far online that he can't physically get any more clients in. He's that busy.
Wow.
It's crazy what he does. I mean, his transformations are the best in the UK
See,
by
your
far.
Body, mate.
Well, he's got me in shape.
You're in better shape now, probably.
Oh, massive, mate, massively. He's got me in the best shape of my life. At time and time again, keeps getting better and better. So what he doesn't know is not worth knowing. And he basically asked us to get involved on this app that he's got an idea for. And us being us, we love a challenge. We said we'd love to. And I know, like, I mean, you think we work hard. He works 10 times harder. Mm. So anyone who works like that is going to be a success.
Yeah.
And he will make it his job to be a success. And I think he sees that in us. Hence why he asked us to get involved. We come up with this idea for this app, which is basically a health and lifestyle, well-being, mental health sort of app.
Nice.
Sort of encompassing a lot. It's not a PT app. It's not a coaching app. It's not anything like that. It's a sort of encompasses a lot of stuff to do with health and well-being.
Nice.
And that's our idea on it. So we've been developing that for the last sort of 2.5-3 years. It should have been out ages ago, but we've had quite a few hiccups along the way like you do with developing and software and stuff like that. When we initially came up with the idea, we put a budget to it. That went about 2 years ago, the budget, and we took put a time frame to it, and that went about 2 years ago. So we're up to like, you know, but we are going to launch after Christmas, January / start of February. It's pretty much there now, isn't it, babe?
Pretty much. Yeah. We just need to do a few more things.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I just want to say. Harriet on the app stuff is phenomenal. Wow. Like, she's got a real eye for, like, the Instagram stuff. She's got a real eye for anything to do with the woman's side of health and fitness, which is great. So, yeah, we all sort of bounce off each other. Scott's like the knowledge. I do a bit more of the work on the computer stuff, and then Harry comes up with the ideas of what we need to implement into the app.
What looks pretty.
Yeah, what looks pretty.
That looks pleasing to the eye.
She's got a real eye for it.
I'm vibing it. I get this totally.
So so it all works pretty well.
We work quite well together.
Yeah, so it's going to be out January, February. So we're really looking forward to that.
The day one app.
Yeah, the day one app.
Day one.
Day one. Nice. Day one app. And our slogan is day one till it's done. So you're always on day one until you're done.
It's good mentality,
Yeah, so that was Scott's idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's our next thing that's going to boost us into millionairedom, hopefully. But yeah, it's nice to, I mean, like I said, we're both into fitness, so it's nice to be able to do something outside of barbering, outside of coffee, and that's something we're both interested in, which is good.
It's good because it shows, though, everything you've kind of done in life is very from passion base, and I think that's how life should be. Like, I nothing wrong with people who are doing a job that they don't really enjoy, but I think you can only do that for so long until you start to feel miserable.
Yeah.
Like, you got to kind of find something that which gets you out of bed in the morning, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
If you're not having that meaning in life, I think it's a unfulfilled life at times.
Yeah, I think we're both the same, that if we don't actually like something, we don't give it anything the time of day, do we? No. If we don't like it.
Like, I'm like that with anything. Like, if I start watching a film, if it doesn't grab me, in the first 2 minutes, I'm like, I don't want to watch it. I'm on my phone. He's like, you're not watching it.
I'll sit there and watch it because I'm a stubborn git.
It needs to grab me. Someone needs to die straight away, or something major needs to happen. Yeah. Otherwise, I literally just switch
off. You're gone, right?
Yeah. I'm like that with everything.
Yeah. So, that's why I think everything we do, we throw 100% passion into it. And if we're not passionate about it, we're just not interested. I'm very much so, hence why I probably left an amazing job of coaching at number one club in the world, Wigan.
Yeah.
To be a barber. Do you know what I mean? Everyone, when I told everyone in the change room, they were like, what? You're going to go and be a barber? You're working at Wigan. You're a 19s coach, probably going to go into first team, but you're going to throw all that way to go and
start cutting hair. We're not that money hungry, are we?
No.
The money comes I think if you're passionate about it,
I'd rather be happy. I would be happy.
We're not chasing any sort of money.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, we're chasing a bit of extra time.
Time. That's the most expensive commodity. Time.
We want more time.
That's what we
want.
You
get more staff, you get no time.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you get someone to manage those for you guys. But it's interesting to say that, because so many people I come across, right, we fear what other people think of us. So when you come from this society of, what are you doing, mate? You're coaching one of the best teams in the world, and you're walking away from it to become a barber. There's so much internal noise going, what am I doing, Jordan? What am I doing, Jordan? I mean, and that step, that fear base, I think, is like a mile wide, but it's an inch deep. Do you know what I mean? That's taking that plunge. But so many people get stuck there. But kudos to you, man, to do it. And I love everything what you guys are about, but I'm very passionate to see people that are okay and comfortable to get out of their comfort zone and do things which test them, make them feel uncomfortable, but they enjoy it on the process, because so many people, you know, they come out of rugby, they stay in rugby because that's all they know. You know what I mean? And
they
become marine rugby player, barber, and now in the app industry with the wellness and fitness.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? I take my hat off to it, man. I really do. And it's hopefully people who are listening to this who are in that stage of their life of transitioning can take a bit of this and go,
fuck. Well, it's like all my clients are sitting in the chair and they'll say, you know, oh, I'm fucking sick of work, I'm sick of this. Well, I'm like, just go and do what you want to do. Like, if you want to do it, you can make it work, whether it's money, whether whatever it is, you can go and do it. Yeah. Like, don't sit there and wallow in 2 years or 3 years, like, pain. What's the point? Life's too short. Yeah. And I was like, I've not got my parents anymore. Harry's lost her dad. It's like, life is so short. Our parents died at very young. So life is too short to be sat there in a job that you don't like, or in a relationship you don't like. I mean, I've got so many of my mates that are just like, I'm just arguing with their missus. I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, why are you living like that? Just if it's toxic, just get out of it, like, and go and live your life, because you could be dead next day. That's you true. Don't know. It's the truth. Like, anything can happen to anybody at any time. And if, you know, I'd rather be somebody that's, you know, living life and happy and then it happens, than be living life for 10 years and, like, really miserable and then it happens and you're like, oh, brilliant. Mm. Do you know what I mean? What's the point? Like, you only get one shot at this shit. Just go out there, do it. Mm. And, like, and just worry about, like, if you give it your 110%, it's going to work.
Yeah.
It's going to work. And if it doesn't, you try something else.
Yeah. That's so true, that is. It's so true. And it's probably, I was about to say that, being in a barbershop, you are like a counsellor. Like men, that's men's safe space. And that's why men are very loyal to their barber, because it's like, it's not just a haircut. It's a session. It's a therapy. It's
as soon as I sit down, they're like...
Yeah. As soon as you hear someone go, how's your week been? Or how's your day been? Or how's home? And you can just see them go...
Yeah. Like
they're in now. You're in.
Like, yeah. Oh, God.
But kudos to you guys, because, you know, it's... It takes a lot to, you've got to be an empathetic person too. You've got to show some form of empathy and care, but you've got to make sure your cup's full as well in these processes too. Because if you're not in that right headspace, you're like, I couldn't have 10 people pouring their soul out to me. You've got to have that thick skin at times too, right?
Some days it's like, you know, if I'm having a particularly bad day with work, stress, like staff or whatever it is, I do find it hard sometimes not to unload on the client. Like, the client's like, how's it going? And like, how's the shot going? I'm like, oh, well, and I'll go, blah, and then I just have to pull myself back and I think, hold on a minute, he's sat in your chair, you're not sat in his chair. And I go, anyway, enough about me, tell me about yourself. But talking about what you were saying there before, it's a very safe environment, that barber chair. And I mean, I've had guys come in and they're telling me about that their missus pregnant before they've even told their mum and dad, before they've even told their mates. And they're telling me, like, and it could be their first haircut. That I'm like, oh, so have you told anyone that? Like, nope, you're my first person. I'm like, what? You're going to tell a complete stranger that? Yeah. But it's nice that they can feel they can do that. Mm. I mean, you have a lot of male clients, don't you, darling?
Yeah, I was going to ask, how's the dynamic with you, Harriet, with the male clients?
Yeah, so they speak to me a lot about, like, women problems, which is quite good, because obviously they probably never get to speak to another girl about what they should do, and I give them advice on how to be a good
woman. Nice.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, really? You think? I'm like, you are doing this all wrong. And they're like, oh, really?
Really?
So it's quite funny, yeah, they appreciate it.
Because I think a lot of men, you know, feel safe around women as well. Like, that's because some men are designed to, we can't share this in front of other men, we might get judged. Okay, I'll go to Harriet and she'll
I've got certain gents who I've said, like, I'm slowing down on cutting hair now, like, go to the other lads, and they're like, oh no, we only want you to cut her hair. I'm like,
I think it's because she keeps brushing her boobs against the back of her head. Can you wash my hair again, please? It's really dirty today. It's really dirty.
Jordan's like, a lot of my gents don't want me to wash their hair. I'm like, really?
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll get Jordan to wash your hair.
It's clean, man. Just done it before at the gym, it's fine.
Yeah, so it is different.
It's a different dynamic. Yeah. But I've got clients that... that I don't cut anymore, that go to Emily in my shop. You know, we've got a girl barber in my shop and she's brilliant. And clients, they'll stop coming to me and they'll go to Emily and they're like, oh, you don't mind it? And I'm like, no, I don't care. As long as you come my shop, I don't care. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. People gel and vibe differently with people. Yeah. It's like, I would never take that personally or anything like that.
A lot of people are scared of Jordan as well. Like, people always go, I bet no one's ever complained that they don't like their hair to you, have they? And they haven't.
Not
ever,
really,
the
no.
whole time. Yeah. Whereas I'm sure everybody's had a client where they've said, oh, you know, I'm not quite happy with that part, but no one has ever
No one's quite complained yet.
Because you're a big lad, obviously. Exactly. But
I suppose I look a little bit intimidating.
Got the tats.
Yeah, I try and smile more and stuff like that. Try and make me a little bit more inviting. But
there was a time when we got fucked over badly by quite a few staff members, and Jordan was in such a bad place that, like, he was coming across quite miserable.
Yeah, I've never struggled. I don't think I've ever really struggled with mental health as such, but I did go through a dark place where I just felt like we trusted quite a few people that worked for us and they really let us down. And it was a big learning curve for me to not give as much of myself to these people going forward, because I was in a real bad place. And it definitely affected me at work. It affected me in my personal life. I was down a lot. And it was mainly not because of the business side or anything like that. It was mainly because it's not how I would treat people. And I just couldn't get my head around that. Like the morals of stuff and stuff like that. And I found it very hard to come to terms with why people do that. And it really did affect me for quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah, and he was like, am I acting really miserable? I feel like I'm really miserable in the shop. I was like, you need to try and just... Yeah. And he was like, I just can't. And I was like...
Shift your energy sort of thing.
Yeah, I think you got a bad review, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a bad review.
And it really
got to me. It was a kid's haircut, wasn't it?
It was a lady that complained.
Yeah, it was a lady that complained. But it was the way that she complained. So first of all, she didn't complain in the shop when I asked her if the haircut was okay.
Yeah.
And she actually agreed the haircut was good. But what she complained about was that a friend came in the shop while I was cutting her son's hair. And my mate has been in jail for 10 years. I'd not seen him. This is the first time I've seen him in 10 years.
Wow.
So he came in the shop, spare of the moment. And obviously I was like, whoa, took me back a little bit. I give him a hug. Obviously, I'm mid-client. It's like, I'm like, so I probably took maybe a minute or two talking to him, just saying hello and stuff like that. She didn't like that.
It's crazy.
So,
yeah.
And I was running late at the time on the previous client. So they were actually running late as well. And so the review I got was that I was very rude.
Acted like you didn't want to be there.
But I mean, I think the biggest thing that hurt me the most was saying that I was rude. I'm never rude. I'm only rude if we want me to be rude.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm never rude, and that really hurt me. And I actually rang her on the phone and said, "Look, you know, I'm really sorry. Blah blah blah. I'll give you your money back. My friend had just come in from jail and all that sort of stuff." And she was dead nice on the phone, and I was like, "You weren't like that when you wrote a review on a keyboard." Do you know what I mean?
Keyboard warriors.
So,
I hate that.
And she ended up changing her review and all that sort of stuff. But that, it really did get to me. And I was like, but that's self-reflection. You've got to take a step back sometimes, look at yourself and think, well, maybe I was a bit miserable.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have took as long from, you know, saying hello to my mate who'd just come out of jail. Blah, blah, blah.
She didn't know the background stories.
No, exactly. And that, I think that hurt me as well, that she was judging me. Just on a 10-minute thing.
Shit, that.
Yeah. So, and I like to think I'm tough-skinned, but, you know, things like that do get to me when it's questioning a moral that I have or something like that.
It's hard, isn't it? I struggle with that one as well. That just kindness and being genuine, and then people don't have the same don't understand as much as you, or they don't get certain things, and for instance. I've got two stories in my head, but one story in particular. Like, say for instance, we went to a game not long ago. Went to watch a rugby game. I'm not going to say the game because the guy will know.
Yeah.
Went to a game, and it was three of us there, and they went to go get beers, and I went to queue to get some food because I went drinking. But I was like, it's jam packed. It's three of us. I'm going to get three sandwiches, obviously. They go, she goes, oh, why did you get one? Why'd you get one for us? I said, well, I'm not going to go in the queue and just get me one. The way I've been brought up is you two are eating two with me. Yeah. Like, I can't just eat a sandwich in front of you. And some people are not brought up that way or not understood that way, but that's where I was. So then it's a different expectation. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's just the way we were brought up.
Yeah.
And there's this other story of reading this book on it, and it goes back to what you said about your scenario, Jordan, is where they were on this train in London, and this guy's sitting there, and the train's packed, and these two kids in the middle on the underground, and they're, like, screaming, playing with each other, And everyone's looking at him like, these two kids are going off you. And the guy's sitting there, he's getting wound up about the kids, and his dad's in, his dad's just hand in his lap like this, his head down like this. And he went, excuse me, are you going to sort out your kids? Everyone's looking at him funny. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, mate. I'm my head's not here today. It's probably just the way they're dealing. Their mother just died. And
I think I've heard that story.
Yeah, and you. Yeah. So from that perspective there, who feels like a piece of shit now?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Him you telling, don't know you know what I mean? Going through, so just like your story then, you've helped the guy just come out of prison 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Imagine you went, you know what, mate? I'm not going to hug you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to
give you a minute. Yeah.
I've got to do this because Karen's going to give me a bad review.
I know, exactly. I think everything's a learning curve, isn't it? And I probably would have been that person not so long ago before I met Harriet. But, you know, I think I'm changing the way it is now where we get problems, where people have got problems that work for us or in the past have worked for us. And we always try and look on the positive side of it. Mm. Like we always say, well, maybe he's doing that because of this. Mm. And we have to try and work this out, don't we? I mean, we've had this recently, haven't we, where I was about to go and really de-dress someone down and like because they'd really messed up. But then they came out and they told us what it was, why they did it. Mm. And that was it then. It was like totally changed the perspective on it.
Yeah.
So it's a thing where you have to sort of, like you said, find the backstory first before you do something like that. But the problem is with
you
the internet.
That very hard, don't
yeah,
you?
I do find it hard, but I'm trying to get better at it. But the difference is when, you know, these keyboard warriors and all this sort of stuff, they just write stuff before they've even thought about it. And then that's it. It's out there.
Yeah.
It's done, isn't it? You know, Twitter and everything like that. I mean, I never write a Facebook post. Mm. I've got Twitter, but I don't never write anything on it because I don't want to be judged on it. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that person. I remember once I made a massive mistake, which was my learning curve on it, was on Twitter. It was actually playing the Rugby World Cup. The Football World Cup was on. I was sat in a hotel playing for Wales, sat in a hotel watching the football, and they were all diving about like, you know, idiots. And I put on a tweet on Twitter. I put on a tweet on Twitter basically saying, you know what I thought of them, which came across as a homophobic comment, right? But at the time, I didn't mean it like that. It's just how I speak in everyday life, and it's been a massive check for me. As soon as I posted it, I was like, oh no, deleted it. But obviously, it was out there. Loads of people screenshotted it, went back to the club, went back to Salford. Oh, no. I got in loads of trouble. I had to write a big thing about it saying that I didn't mean it in that way. It was just like a rugby banter thing and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, that's why I just don't post anything like that anymore. Do you know what I mean?
It's never good, is it?
It's never good to comment stuff like that.
It's hard. It's a fine line because
massive 90%, fine line.
90% get it. It's just like 10% you know, the
minority that are going to get offended. Which is rightly, they should get offended as well. But like I say, My upbringing is I was in a heavily male background, straight into the Marines, which is heavily male, straight into rugby, heavily male. Do you know what I mean? So we've all probably been brought up a little bit different to everybody else.
Yeah.
But that's no excuse. You know, you've got to learn from your mistakes. I said sorry, made it all better, and hopefully no one wants to kill me now.
Never tweeted ever again.
Never tweeted again. I've still got my blue tick though, so that's all right.
Have you? They're not taking that off.
No, it's still there.
I want to ask you as well, in business, Harriet, you know, for people out there who want to get into the barbering or, you know, into that game that you guys are in and thriving in, you know, what would be the best form of advice you'd give to someone who is a barber, who wants to evolve and grow?
Never give up. Never think that you're good enough. Because you can always keep learning, always try and improve your skills, always go on as many courses as possible, always be on time, always never leave early, and just act like you want to be there, and then you'll succeed.
What was the biggest learning curve you had?
That's a difficult one. Opening too many shops. I think it's good to push yourself, but sometimes look at where you are and focus on that for a while and just don't go too ahead of yourself too quickly, maybe. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, definitely.
Just like enjoy where you are. If you're in a good place, just stay there.
Yeah, sometimes sit in the moment.
A little bit longer.
Just a bit longer. Sit in that cushy moment just a bit longer before you throw yourself off.
It might not be.
Yeah, 100%.
There's learning curves and all of that, though, because if you didn't try, you wouldn't know.
Exactly. Right?
Correct.
You'd be sitting on this side going, told you we should have done it.
Yeah, exactly.
How about, you reckon you've tried to, you know, your dad being the legend that he is then? Like, that's a hard thing to work, you know, compare yourself to.
I would never compare myself to my dad.
Did he give you much teach? Like, obviously he taught you, but it's...
No, he didn't actually teach me. He sent me off to go and train at Trevor Sorby in central London because he said that would be the best training. And then he got ill, so... I didn't actually learn much from him at all, apart from when I was really young and all the key things on, like, work really hard, always be early, always come off your break early, like, always be willing to learn. That's what I learned from him mainly. So it's a shame that he didn't actually get to teach me, like, the hair side of things.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because probably without even knowing Jordan to that extent, he's probably... from his background, on time all the time, very punctual, expects high standards from people.
Same as Jordan.
That's what I mean.
You have said, haven't you, in the past?
Yeah, that they're very similar.
Very similar.
Work ethic, definitely.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow. They say you align with someone like your father.
Yeah, they do.
You didn't look anything like him. But
it's morals, so, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. And that's a hard one as well. If you have a high expectation on certain things, right, it's hard to... drill out into someone who's not got those on themselves yet. Like, it's standards are, like, I think you would have, I can't speak on your behalf, Harry, but I got punished really bad from sports life if I was late to things. Like, for instance, this year at Swinton, I was talking about this yesterday, it is a dice system. As soon as you hear dice in rugby, you know you're fucked.
Yeah.
But it's literally like, if you're rocked up late to training, you get a dice roll. If you're wearing the wrong kit, dice roll. If you're a minute late, if you don't bring the right boots or kit, if you X, Y, and Z. So when I was at Swinton, it was get a dice number one. If you roll it, is sing a song in front of everyone at the meeting, a team video.
Oh my God,
so you
really?
Sing a song, which is, I didn't mind that. And you probably go, all right, that's all George. And then the other one was, number two was 5 naked burpees. But you know, you got the women physios there. You know all this, like, George.
Oh my God, have you had to do that?
Probably. We used to do all sorts of stuff.
Number three was sit in the whole meeting naked. Like 40-minute video session naked.
Are you joking?
So you go from that lifestyle then to a corporate world. How do you compare the two? Like, in one of them was dress up in a hot dog the whole training session. Just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a deal. So you make
sure. We had a Mohican. Do you remember Wales? We had the Mohican. Did you play that year?
I missed that, but I remember the boys having it.
So we had one of them was a Mohican. At one point, we had about 10 lads all with Mohicans.
Really?
Yeah.
We were talking about this the other day. So we did the training Wednesday morning downstairs. Like, Jordan's...
I'm trying to get Harriet to do it.
Yeah, come. It's great fun. It's really good.
She thinks she's not fit enough to do it.
No, you're perfect.
Didn't she?
It's fine. All fitness levels there, but just don't go with this guy, Gul Rahim. If you go with that...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
He's like a racing snake.
Yeah,
just don't go there. He's like... Well, I think we got about 3 pull-ups out by the time he'd done a full lap. Yeah.
So me and Jordan were buddied up together, and then there's other two other in your group, and they run around the block while you're doing the workout. But he's that fast. I think we got 3 reps out.
Yeah.
But I'll give it to Jordan.
That's
like,
good that I feel.
Give it to Jordan, though. Like, we ran, right? First week, I thought, you know, I'm going to blast Jordan. You know, my ego kicked in. I thought, yeah, surely not. And then he kept up with me. And then the second week, he was flying past me a couple of times. I'm going, hang on. What do you weigh, Jordan?
18 stone.
80, what's that in kilograms?
Ooh, 114 maybe.
114. Like. I'm 84 kgs. And he's beating me on the runs. I'm like, hang on.
He cannot win, though.
It's the competitive edge.
Competitive edge. I was knackered up. but I didn't beat you on many. But I thought, like, it's nice to be able to train with someone who pushes themselves really hard.
I don't push myself that
You don't. Hard. You don't. I have to push her so hard in training.
Like, he's like, do you not want to be the best? I'm like...
No? Yeah. So I have to, like, when she's not looking, I just put the weights on and stuff like that, so she can't see.
Bang.
Yeah,
bang.
But then she can do it. Every time we've done something, like, I mean, she squatted 95 kilos the other day like 5 reps, you know what I mean? And she, what do you weigh, 60 kilos?
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
You know, she's done over 100 before, but it's only because I go, stick the weight on, I'm here, you can do it. Yeah. And she does it every single time. But I know she has this mental block in her head
that
stops her from doing it, or stops her to doing it when she's not, when I'm not around, or when someone's not around. So if I can push her and push her and push her, that's what I'm just trying to do all the time.
My dad used to always do that.
Yeah, your dad did the same.
Do you
didn't
not
he?
Want to be the best? Do you not want to win? How I was like, okay, all right. So then I thought I was competitive, but then when he passed through, I was like, I'm actually not competitive. He was just drilling it into me, and that's what he does to me now. It's weird.
Yeah. It's levels, isn't it? It really is. I know that old saying that people talk, but it is literally levels to competitiveness. And I've got a nephew, right, that he's only five, and we did the hike when he was over on holiday here. He's in Australia, and then he's got this problem where he has to be first. Like, if we're walking, he's got to be ahead of you.
Really?
Yeah, oh, and he's five. So imagine when he's 30.
Oh, my God. He's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah. He just doesn't like anyone beating him. Yeah. So he's like...
That's mad.
That's like, brilliant. That's a good thing. I wish more kids should be like that.
Yeah.
He's going to be
that's
very successful.
One thing in schools now, it's like, everything's so nicey-nicey.
Yeah.
Like, oh, great. Well done. You finished 10th. Come on. Like, I know you shouldn't like praise people for finishing for. I get the old inclusion stuff, but like society, when you get out of school, when you get out of uni, and all that sort of stuff, like if you're not winning, you're not going to succeed. Mm. Like, and if when we're probably not going to have kids, and we pretty much decide that, I think, haven't we? We can say that on air, can't we?
Yeah.
so, but if we had kids, I would be telling them, like, you've got to work your hardest. You've got to win. I want you to win. If you don't win, it's great.
That's why we're not having kids.
Yeah, but if you don't win, that's fine. But I want to know that you've tried your damn hardest to win.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I can't stand complacency or people that just put half-hearted effort in.
Mm.
Just, like, either do it to win. If you're not going to win, that's fine. But do it to win.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whether you're not going to win or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, I knew I was never going to be an amazing rugby player. But I knew if I worked hard, I could play pro rugby. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So, if that's all I was going to aspire to be, then at least I've got to play pro rugby. And I tried. At least I can say I tried my hardest doing everything I've ever done.
Do you think you left all your, like, I want to ask you this, and then I'll counteract it. Do you think you left everything out there? Do you think you could have done more?
Most of the time, I think I left everything out there. Definitely in training, 100%. I think what stopped me in games was the fear. I was always very, especially towards the back end of my career, I was very fearful of making mistakes. And I think that affected my game, where I think I had coaches that would be very hard on me if I dropped a ball in a game. And because I wasn't, I mean, look, I played pro rugby and I played a lot of Super League games and stuff like that, but I certainly wasn't an amazing player. But I did work my tits off.
I thought you were a good player, George.
Thanks, mate. But I knew I was never going to be an amazing player, but I knew I could outwork everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was always my thing. So if I could be fit, try and be fitter, try and work as hard, try and do that, then hopefully I would get a shot. And that was always my thing. But towards the back end of my career, because I was not always on the fringes, but because I did start a lot, but... Because I was always near or there or about, you know, either sub or starting, you know, or, you know, I was sort of like one drop away from getting dropped. It always affected me really bad, you know, I did struggle that towards the back end of, like, in training I was great because I knew if I made a mistake I'd just get up and I'd run as hard as I could and make up for it, blah, blah, blah. But in a game... I'd drop the ball, my head would go down, I'd be looking up and I'm thinking, shit, he's going to pull me off in a minute, I'm going to be raging after the game, I can't sleep, I can't do this, and then I'm going to take that into next week, and blah, 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 and it really did affect me. So the fear got into my head more than I should have let it, whereas now I'm not like that. It's probably because I don't have that pressure on me. I always thought I could outwork people, but the fear of doing a skill wrong sometimes affected me.
Mm. It's interesting, everything you just said then, because I think every rugby player has felt that feeling.
Mm.
That feeling of, I've had many poor games, but I remember one in particular where I got so nervous. I made one mistake that when I put the ball into the scrum and passed it out, it went over the guy's head because I was that nervous. And I remember looking to the guys on the sideline going, is he warming up yet?
Yeah, he's coming on. That's what you do,
and that's what you do, and then you're in that spiral. Then you're not even present.
It's a horrible feeling.
You're for the next 5-10 minutes of that game. You're not even you're dwelling on that mistake.
Oh, yeah, God, that
sounds horrible. But that's life in certain aspects, isn't it? Like you know, if you made that mistake in the barbershop and you've got 5 cuts late and you're still thinking about that fade you fucked up. We're all human, make mistakes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just a way of life. But it's like I wish. And that's why I like dealing with athletes now is like I like to work in with those thought patterns. And the best, the mad thing about it, right, the best players that I've worked with and come across have the deepest insecurities because they're fighting their ass off to prove to themselves that their confidence is questioned because that's why they never settle. They're just constantly pushing and pushing. And that's why they're the best. Johnny Wilkinson. Mm. I think he was one of the worst overthinkers, and the anxiety that he had was from his own, never happy with his performance and works his ass off in training. But I'd say that's in fighting, MMA. I want to ask you as well, you had a couple of scraps on the field, didn't you?
Yeah, I had quite a few. More than I can remember. Trouble seemed to follow me quite a bit when I played. I think it was mainly because I was very much a player that, I was aggressive on the pitch. I didn't like getting slapped, but, I could take it. There's a lot of players that can't take it, and that used to wind me up. So I'd be like, well, you're dishing it out, but I'll give it you back and you can't take it. So, yeah, I found myself in a lot of scrapes and stuff like that, but it's all part of the game, isn't it? I never held a grudge with anyone after the game. Even when I got absolutely mauled by someone or someone did something really bad to me that was out of order, I'd still never bear a grudge. It's rugby, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's a game. I certainly didn't take that into, in the car park later on or anything like that. It's not part of me, really.
Mm. Who was your, your best coach or someone that took you under their wing?
Best coach, without a doubt, Sean Wayne.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I wish I would have had him as a youngster growing up or even in my early, sort of like late 20s, early 30s. I wish I would have spent more time with him. I only really got to have a good year and a half with him. And that year that I played at Wigan towards the back end of my career was probably my best year I'd ever played, and I was 34. And that was purely because of his coaching. He was the type of coach that didn't give you any shit. Like, told you exactly how it was. If he thought you were shit, he would tell you to your face and he would show you video why he thought you were shit. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't be just an opinion.
Yeah, wow.
It would be backed up with video. It would be backed up with something else, something that's tangible that you can get into your head. Right, yeah, he's right here. You know what I mean? Rather than someone coming up to you and go, oh, well, I thought you could have done this and you could have done that and blah, blah, blah. Just feed me a load of pack of fucking lies, which, I had a few coaches that did that.
And then drop you then.
And then drop you. Or they'll be bigging you up all week and then they go to the weekend and they go, and they wouldn't even tell you themselves. That was another fucking thing that pissed me off, was most of the coaches played the game. Why leave it to right to the game time, just before you're warming up, and then they tell you that you're either on the bench or not, or you're picked or not. And they don't even come and tell you. Their assistant coach will come and tell you. Yeah, and I'm just like, you fucking gutless piece of shit. Do you know what I mean? It's like all them sort of things get you as a player. And I vowed that when I did go into coaching, that was always what I wouldn't do. Obviously, I didn't get that far in it, but there was a lot of coaches I had that I just thought were gutless. And I think it's a shame because they've all been in that position. Mm. They've all been a player. So either they're just leading on from what they've been taught, and all the coaches, mainly the coaches, were like that, and none of them have been comfortable enough to not be like that, Sean Wayne was, or they're gutless.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And that was, because at the end of the day, coaching is an opinion. Do you know what I mean? Some coaches like players, some coaches don't like players. Some players will follow coaches to every single club.
Yeah.
And some, they'll turn up at a club and get rid of you straight away, which is what happened with me 3 times with Brian Noble.
What club was he at?
I was at Wigan.
Hold on,
Wigan 2006. I went there and we weren't doing that great. I went there, played pretty well. Nobby came in to save the club. And I think I lasted 2 or 3 weeks from when he was in there. He just didn't like me. Sipped me straight out, went to Widnes. So then from Widnes, I went to Crusaders. And he went there. He followed me there. As soon as he walked in the room, he was like, "You're right, JJ." And I was like, "Yeah, fucking brilliant." And that's my card marked. Yeah. Didn't get a contract there for the next year. Wow. After he fed me a load of lies all that year, and then went to Salford. And lo and behold, he followed me to Salford as well.
You're like, mate, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
So he
followed me to Salford, didn't get a contract. You know, I'm not saying I was the best player in the world or anything like that, but I felt I gave enough all the time to be able to get a warrant a place. And I just, you know, I think it says a lot when he follows you to 3 clubs and he gets rid of you from 3 clubs. Yeah. So to me, that says...
He hates you.
There's an agenda. Yeah. It's fine. It is what it is. Like,
did you ever address it? Did you ever speak and go, mate?
A couple of times I said to him, look, is this personal? You know, is this something that I've done? And he was going, no, nothing. This is just the way it is and blah, blah, blah. And he'd say a lot of things, never actually say you're shit or I just don't like you as a player or never say that. It was always be a roundabout ways. Or I'd rather him just come out to my face and say, I don't fucking like you.
Yeah, well.
You know what I mean? I would rather respect that. But it just said a lot of stuff that he came to the 3 clubs I was at and I left. Every single time. Maybe that's me, maybe it's not. It is what it is. Like I say, I've never seen him since, and I'll probably never even ask him. I couldn't be asked. You know, it's done in the past now, there's no point. And Wayne, he was definitely the best coach I ever had. And then probably after that, Sean, Yestin Harris.
Yestin Harris, good, was he?
Yeah, I got on well with Yestin. Yeah. Even though he didn't give me the captaincy 1 year, which I really fell out with him for, but I understood his reasons. You know, I thought I was due the captain that year. He gave it to Coppy. Coppy had more experience than me. At the end of the day, Coppy was going to start. I was coming off the bench, so I had to understand it. You know, up until that time, I'd been captain. Coppy wasn't, so it was almost like he was taking it off me, and I did take it very hard, but I didn't fall out of him. I just turned up and I ended up playing really well that year and then got signed at Wigan for my last year. So
amazing.
So Wayne and Yestin were probably my best.
Yeah, nice. I think Yestin's an agent now, isn't he?
Yeah. Yestin's an agent. He was another player actually that basically told you how it was. Bit like similar to Wayne. He didn't feed me a full of any shit. I think I've heard people that slag him off and say that they did to him. But to me, I can only go by what I felt. He was always straight up with me, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everyone, it's horses for courses, isn't it? Some people like that type of mentality. I like someone who's direct. You just know where you stand then straight away. But it's hard, isn't it? Because some people this is like they don't want to be direct with you. But you seem weaker telling assistant guy to, hey, tell him he's not playing. And then play happy family on Monday at training. You're like, come on, mate.
Yeah, it's a strange way, but... You know,
How was I want to kind of go back to the business to wrap it up. You know, for like I said to you earlier about growing, you know, for someone who wants to get into the industry, what is something how to build a business? If we got what's the key components or how you found growing your business, or was it literally doing good jobs?
It was literally just keep going.
Belief.
Have
a bit of belief.
It's not going to happen overnight.
We didn't plan anything. So if I could say plan, I would say plan because we didn't plan.
Have a business plan.
We still don't have one. Yeah, we've made so many mistakes since we've opened the businesses that we've had to learn from on the go. But had we had planned stuff, we maybe wouldn't have made them mistakes. But that's obviously, I just think that's how we learn. Yeah. We like to make mistakes then not do it again, hopefully. But other than that, it's just having belief in your work ethic, I think, isn't it? That we both know that whatever I think we'll do, we will succeed at eventually.
Certainly hours then.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Certainly
hours then. Yeah. And it's just us, isn't it?
Just keep going.
Just have good morals, be kind to everyone, and just do your best. That's all we say when it comes to business.
Love that. How can guys find the shops? Where are they based? So anyone in the Manchester area, Salford area, wants a cut, where can they go? Or coffee?
Okay, yeah, so we're based in Salford Quays, which is under Clippers Quay, which is a block of apartments. We do great coffee, and we've got bar bring in there. So how would you get to us? We're near the Red Bridge.
Yeah, we're big the Trafford Road Bridge, just before you get over to the United Ground for coming from Salford. We're just on the right-hand side there. Yeah, like I said, we do fantastic coffee, protein options. We've got a massive protein push at the moment with regards to protein yogurts and all these protein options. We're trying to make that a bit of a niche for us at the moment. And then we fly into that with, you know, amazing haircuts, male grooming, and fully licensed bar. So, yeah, football days are very busy. If you come into the game, come down to the shop and have a
get
beer.
Get
some beer in and, you know, just before you get to the game. And then our other shop is in a little village called Monton, which is a beautiful little village, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
And that was our first shop, actually. We've had that one for 7 years nearly now. And that's just a barber shop, but very high sort of standards. Yeah, very high standards, very high-end barbering. It's not your normal shop. Nice. We always have a laugh in there. We've got beer on tap in there as well, which is rare for a barber shop. A few places have bottles, but no one has beer on tap. We've got a TV with music playing. Yeah, it's a nice environment, isn't it? It's a lovely little community sort of barbershop, that one.
Amazing, guys. Well, amazing. I'd say follow Jordan on social media, but he won't respond to you because he doesn't talk to anyone. But Harriet's on social media as well, I'm sure. What's yours, Harriet?
I talk. What am I?
What's your bio under?
Harriet Jones, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. Have a look.
Well, we'll find it. I'll put it on.
Yeah,
I will. Well, guys, yeah, look, one thing I like to say before I wrap up is I always ask my guests, what are you grateful for? Go you first, Harriet.
Each other?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you've answered it. Okay. Yeah. Beautiful, guys. It's been a pleasure having you guys on, not to show your business, but your journey and what you're building. And it just obviously shows, as long as you've got enough passion and drive and desire, you can literally do whatever you want. And that's the key message I've gone from today anyway. So, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Amazing. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it, walk it. Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only. Don't just talk it, walk it. Walk is only.